What if everything we've been taught about leadership is backwards? Picture this: a humble servant tending to travelers' needs disappears one day, and suddenly the entire expedition falls apart. This isn't a tale of incompetence, it's Hermann Hesse's Journey to the East, where the servant, Leo, turns out to be the group's true leader all along. This paradox struck Robert K. Greenleaf so deeply that it sparked a revolution in how we understand power, authority, and influence. His radical proposition? The best leaders don't start by wanting to lead, they start by wanting to serve. This isn't just feel-good philosophy. Companies like Southwest Airlines and Starbucks built their cultures on it. Phil Jackson used it to win 11 NBA championships. Why does servant leadership work when so many leadership fads fade? Perhaps because it taps into something fundamental about human nature. We follow those who genuinely care about our growth, not those who merely command our compliance. Can you truly be both servant and leader? Most people see these as opposing forces, one submissive, the other dominant. But Greenleaf reveals they're actually two sides of the same coin, and understanding this fusion transforms everything. The servant leader is servant first. Before any thought of leading emerges, there's a natural desire to serve others. This isn't strategy, it's orientation, a fundamental way of being in the world. Contrast this with leaders who lead first, driven by power needs or material ambitions. The difference shows up in a simple question. Are those you serve growing? Do they become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous? What about society's least privileged? Are they benefiting or at least not further harmed? These aren't abstract metrics. They're deeply personal indicators of whether your leadership actually serves or merely uses people. Servant leadership requires constant experimentation under what Greenleaf calls the shadow of doubt. You act on your best hypothesis, examine results honestly, and make fresh choices based on what truly serves others rather than what serves your ego.
Systems don't change themselves. They need inspired individuals who see clearly and act courageously. This isn't lone wolf heroics. It's saying, "I will go. Come with me." Rosa Parks didn't wait for committee approval before refusing to give up her bus seat. Rachel Carson's Silent Spring launched the environmental movement by speaking truth when silence would have been safer. These weren't people born with special powers. They saw what needed doing and took that crucial first step. The servant leader harnesses this power of initiative for the common good, not personal glory. They recognize that waiting for universal agreement often means waiting forever. Instead, they venture forward, accepting both the risk of failure and the chance of success, always guided by one question: how will this serve others' highest needs? Every movement needs a vision. The servant leader articulates where we're going when others feel lost. This isn't about quarterly targets. It's about the big dream that excites imagination and challenges people to achieve what they don't yet know how to do. Martin Luther King Jr. didn't just outline problems. He painted a vivid picture of children of former slaves and slave owners sitting together at the table of brotherhood. What makes servant leadership different? The purpose emerges from deep listening to others' needs and aspirations, not imposed from above. When people understand not just what they're doing, but why it matters for something larger than themselves, engagement transforms. The servant leader's articulation of purpose taps into our fundamental human hunger for meaning, creating alignment that no authority or incentives can match.
The rarest leadership quality isn't charisma or intelligence. It's genuine listening that transforms both parties. Servant leaders respond to problems by listening first, rather than arriving with predetermined answers. True listening transcends technique. It's receptivity rather than imposition. The servant leader listens with ears, eyes, heart, and intuition for what's said and unsaid, for emotions beneath words, for aspirations not yet formed. This dignifies others, provides crucial information, builds trust, and models desired communication.
Leaders who primarily broadcast ideas may appear decisive, but they miss vital information and create cultures where people stop sharing what they really think. The servant leader always accepts and empathizes with people, never rejecting them, though sometimes refusing inadequate performance. This distinction is crucial. Like family, leadership requires unqualified acceptance of followers as people, despite their imperfections. This doesn't mean lowering standards. It separates inherent worth from behavior. The servant leader simultaneously holds people in high regard while challenging them to grow. Great leaders work with half people, immature, stumbling individuals, nonetheless capable of dedication and heroism when wisely led. When people feel fundamentally accepted rather than conditionally valued, they bring their full selves to work, take appropriate risks, and commit deeply to shared purposes. Strategic withdrawal means stepping back to gain perspective and preserve resources. Greenleaf's Law of the Optimum involves maintaining energy reserves for emergencies, while systematic neglect prioritizes the important over the urgent. Decades before smartphones, Greenleaf recognized that leaders need disconnection time to reflect, integrate experiences, and access deeper wisdom. Abraham Lincoln retreated to the soldier's home during the Civil War for necessary distance. The servant leader models this balance, creating cultures where sustainable engagement replaces burnout. This withdrawal creates space for foresight, the central ethic of leadership, the ability to see now as organic unity connecting past, present, and future. The leader functions as historian, analyst, and prophet, bridging information gaps with intuition when data is incomplete. The best leaders think like scientists, artists, and poets, trusting hunches while recognizing these are probabilities. The failure to foresee may be an ethical failure. Today's unethical actions often result from earlier failures to anticipate when freedom to act existed. Once you lose the lead of foresight, you merely react rather than shape events. Steve Jobs combined technological understanding with intuitive sense of what people would want before they knew to ask. Developing foresight requires practices that seem counterintuitive: quiet reflection, broad reading beyond your field, diverse experiences, and cultivation of awareness. John Woolman eliminated slavery among American Quakers through 30 years of gentle persuasion. Rather than censuring slaveholders, he posed moral questions. What does owning slaves do to you as a moral person? What institution are you leaving your children? By 1770, nearly a century before the Civil War, no Quakers owned slaves. Nelson Mandela and Gandhi proved lasting change comes from convincing others, not forcing them. Gandhi's satyagraha, truth force, persuaded through moral consistency rather than coercion. This requires patience, planting seeds that may take decades to bear fruit, and faith that truth eventually prevails. Most importantly, it requires embodying the change you seek. The most persuasive argument is a life well lived in service to others. Servant leaders create conditions where others develop their own capacities for persuasion and moral leadership, inviting them into the process rather than hoarding influence. This multiplication effect ensures servant leadership extends far beyond any single individual's direct reach. The real obstacle to progress isn't evil people or broken systems. It's fuzzy thinking by intelligent people who fail to lead or follow servant leaders. Too many settle as critics, retreating into research rather than building better institutions. Confucius illustrated this when a king asked about thieves. If you were not covetous, although you should reward them to do it, they would not steal. Responsibility rests with the privileged. The servant sees problems as internal, not external. If something needs fixing, change begins within. Joy, too, is generated internally, not found outside. Like Leo in Hesse's story, true servants lead through the quality of their inner life, listing others by their presence. The greatest tragedy? Natural servants with leadership potential who choose not to lead or who follow non-servants. Society changes only by producing enough people who will change it, one person and action at a time. The servant leader's effectiveness flows from who they are, not just what they do. Their leadership is authentic because it emerges from core values and identity rather than position or authority. This inner work manifests in outer service, creating leadership that genuinely transforms rather than merely rearranges. In a world obsessed with personal brand and climbing ladders, servant leadership offers a different truth. Real power comes from lifting others up, not standing above them. It's about being strong enough to put others' growth first, courageous enough to lead by serving, and wise enough to know that the greatest legacy is the people you develop, not the positions you hold. The question isn't whether you have a leadership title, it's whether you have the heart of a servant. Do you listen more than you speak? Do you help others grow? Do you serve the common good? Your challenge? Look around. Who needs serving? What needs doing? Where can you go first and invite others to follow? Start where you are, with what you have, for those within reach. Because as Hesse's story reveals, the servant who seems least important often turns out to be the leader everyone needs. Your move.